that are in. I'm trying to figure out a way of describing how this thing is arranged. The first plans had it, if you take your index fingers and point them directly at each other and put them about a quarter, the tip of them about a quarter inch apart, that's how the first dipole, if you will, was arranged. And this is for 2 meters. And then he said to tune it, either cut off a little bit from each end, he started with a quarter of an inch, or add some using a bolt. I'm not sure exactly what you call the bolt, a split bolt. So you could add length to it, and that would be one way of tuning that one. Is if you take your index fingers and offset them so you can move them back and forth, not touching, but parallel to each other, and you can change the length by adjusting where your fingers are in relationship to each other, next to each other. And that's the way we built this one. So the two parts of the dipole, if you will, are about a quarter inch apart. Well, my question is the length, the total length, rather than cutting off or adding to the ends of the elements, of the two dipole elements, can you just push those, again, parallel, closer or further apart? Will that do the same thing as cutting off something from the end?
Well, I'm thinking that it will approximate, not be exact, but it will approximate the same change. You know, when you put a feed line on an antenna, unavoidably, the feed line becomes part of the radiating antenna. Let's take ladder line or parallel line. There are different names for it. And if you put that at the feed point, then the antenna proper is from the far end of the left side, I'll just refer to it that way, of your dipole to the feed point, and then it changes direction. And when it changes direction, it changes phase. But it still radiates. A ladder line still radiates. Now, you can choke that off, of course. Same thing with coax. You can put a choke, say, an eighth of a wavelength from the feed point down the coax, and it will choke off return. And if you have problems with RF in the shack, and you know what that sounds like and what it will do if you have any, you can choke it off at the feed point. It's actually the best place. It's about one-eighth wavelength away from the feed point. Put a choke in there. It's a one-to-one balun. An isolation transformer is another way people refer to it, but it chokes off return of the signal when it wants to go back down in the wrong direction. You know, it's not going to go out. It's going to come back at you in the shack. And that's because our signal is AC. AC travels both toward the antenna and back toward the shack. You want all of it to radiate out of the antenna and none of it to come back into the shack. So putting a choke out there is good for any antenna, but especially, it's good for any antenna, actually. But you can put the choke right outside of the shack if that's more convenient. But you should be aware that the entire length of the feed line then is radiating. It's called common mode current when it comes back towards you, and it is radiating. Look up common mode current, and there'll be a diagram of how it moves, how the energy moves toward the antenna and back toward the shack, how there are actually three and not two paths for this energy. There's the center conductor, there's the inside of the braid, and then the outside of the braid. The inside, this nearest to the the center conductor, and the outside that's near the sheath or the covering on the coax. There's actually three paths there. The common mode current is traveling on the outside current path, the outside. If you'll excuse me just a moment, I'm going to change batteries because I've burned this one up. KK4JBQ.
He's out for 180 degrees out.
I'm not perfect, and it could be 180 degrees out, but the fact is there's a change, and there will be an effect from that. With an antenna, my favorite saying is, everything affects everything. So any little tweak that you do, either by necessity because of the way it's being deployed, or the materials that's used to make it, everything affects everything. Now, when you do just examining the right angle turn, that return path or common mode current takes will be a different phase angle. You could be absolutely right. It could be 180 degrees. I think that it's a 90 degree turn, so I thought 90 degrees out of phase, but you could be right. KK4JBQ, I'm changing batteries. I'm on standby.
Everything changes everything. So it could be 90, could be 180, it could be 360 for all we know.
JBQ, new battery, I'm back on the air.
RON. Handheld, or what do you have that you'd have to have a battery onto it?
I've been handheld, maybe half of my life as a ham. I did have a nice radio in the shack here, but had a flood in this room, and I don't know how it affected that radio, so I put it in a box. And in the meantime, I've just talked on an HD. This is a Lolenco, I think, DJ500. It's a modest little handheld. And I'll tell you what, its battery is 8.3 volts fully charged, and at 7.3 volts, it's practically discharged. So that tells you how much reserve power I have, even with a freshly charged battery. Not a long time. KK4JBQ.
Dean, I'm using an Lenko DR135. I got it over Christmas after my other one, which was an ICOM, and about 30 years old. I think it overheated and died.
Saying one effect of operating a radio that we have to accept, and that is that the more you key down on that push-to-talk, the longer winded you are, and I'm one of the longest, I'll have to say, the hotter your finals get. And heat kills electronics. It just kills them. I've got another HT. Won't go into every detail about it, but it has gotten... There's a lot of internal noise now, and I know that the components drift and there's wear and tear. Even though there's no physical change, there's been an electrical change in the circuit, which causes this thing to crackle and pop, even when this radio, the one I'm on right now, is clear as a bell, and a good signal comes in very quiet. That one is very noisy. So in as much as that radio was about $35, and you know now what radio that is, I use my Valfangs as extension speakers. They are very good for that, unless the electronics have been cooked. And that one is just noisy. So I have one in the kitchen, I have one in a bathroom. Whenever I leave, I can listen to some, if I'm on the round table, I can listen to the rest. And if they get around to me and I'm not at my radio anymore, I just have to hope they'll realize I'm not coming back right now and skip on to the next person. Anyway, I can keep up with the round table or with the net. You know, I can hear who's checking in and I can hear the rag cue, even when not by my transmitting radio. And Bell things are really good for that. I mean, they're inexpensive. They're really good receivers. So why not use an inexpensive radio to be just a receiver at some other point in the house? Now, I realize some people can't operate a radio on its rubber duck in the house. But that's how I use them, and it's served me for years. KK4JBQ.
Correct that the heat plays a huge part. In Vietnam, we were down south of Saigon, where the temperatures were in the upper 90s, I guess. And then we moved north of Saigon, where it was probably in the upper 80s or so. I don't know, say a 10-degree difference, something like that, whatever it actually was. Our outage rate dropped 90%.
This damage that's cumulative. It may not seem to have affected the circuitry. You know when your finals go because it just won't transmit. But how about all the rest of it? And even the receive side of the radio. The wear and tear is cumulative. So they're built really well, and you know, we'll say that they're probably worth what they cost. But you should use them wisely. I don't. When I drive an automobile, I don't just go slamming on the gas and then screech to a halt at a red light. I grew up with kids like that, and they went through tires, and they went through engines and transmissions, and I never did. So it's the wear and tear. How are you going to treat your equipment will absolutely determine how long you own and are served by that equipment. But you know, your use of the equipment in the armed services, well, you do what you have to do, and you make the equipment perform, because there is you know, an objective that has to be met. Well, anyway, so is everything as clear as mud? KK4JBQ.
Making more sense. It's been a long time since I got into the math and stuff like that, but it makes more sense. This thing is working. I'm not on it now. I'm on a J-pole now, but I'm playing with that Yagi. From an orientation standpoint, I've got it pointing right now at 30 degrees, which is from Brevard. A lot of the mountains are in that direction, Mount Pisgah and some of the others, whereas the ones on Caesar's Head are, and Sassafras are almost due south, the opposite direction. Well, tonight I was doing okay on one of them, and then I got on 146610 down in, it's on Caesar's Head, which is, probably southeast, I guess. And I could hear them, but I could not break the repeater. And actually, it was because I was working off the back end of that Yagi, as you were talking about earlier with the front to rear ratio. So when I switched to the J-pole, then I had no problem.
And you know, the antenna on Caesar's Head is on a TV tower. And it's mounted off to the side, so as not to be so greatly affected by the metal that the tower is made of. There are 6 or 8 foot arms that extend. It's It's vertically polarized, and so it sticks straight up and down, and it's between 6 and 8 feet, I can't remember, away from the tower. But you know that the metal in the tower will actually give a bit of a shadowing effect of the signal right there. And if there's any reflection from that, it will add to the energy that's going away from the tower, if you understand what I'm trying to say. So it's not like it was you know, it's like 3,000-4,000 feet up, so, you know, it has the advantage of height, but it has the effect of the tower being so near also. And so it's the effective radiated power is not in a perfect circle, you know. And then when you get away from the point of origin, you might call it, then you encounter all of these receiving stations that have a lot of earth between them and the tower. A big old mountain is going to absorb some of that energy. It, you know, 2 meters is line of sight, so if it hits the mountain, it's just going to be absorbed. It's not going to jump over the top. It's not going to go around the sides. Yeah, so I have fun imagining RF. We can't see it. It's out of our range of vision. We can't see a lot of things. It, you know, it's all the same stuff, though. It's the same energy that light is. It's just at a different frequency, and we can't see it. But I imagine being able to see RF and what it does. So you can experience what it does. Say, we were talking earlier about a signal strength meter and near and far field testing. So you get the swinging of a needle if it's analog, or numbers change in the case of digital. You'll get some effect in the near field. You'll get another effect in the far field, and you can extrapolate what's going on. With math, you can actually get some numbers, and it's still kind of theoretical because you don't know, you can't factor in everything in the path, what's absorbing and what's reflecting over distance. And I'm talking a lot of distance, miles of distance, in the far field. It is fascinating. It is it's a lifelong pursuit of trying to understand this one thing, radio frequencies, radio energy. I guess it's properly called electromagnetic energy. KK4JBQ.
Carl, in Korea, we're using shots, and rather than pointing directly at each other, we would bounce it around the mountain. We would point it, say, to the right of the mountain, and I guess it was kind of like a Fresnel zone reaction. It would go kind of around the mountain. Couldn't do it all the time, but once in a while we could make it do that.
Bottom time is the metallurgical content of the soil or the rock in the mountain. If it was highly magnetic, then it will do that. It pulls it, and it might even have a bit of a slingshot effect. But, and if it were, this is kind of a long explanation, but we were talking about in the Tryon Club, in the Thermal Belt Amateur Radio Club up there in Tryon, we were looking forward to a simplex net. And some people were saying how, you know, two meters, it's line of sight. This is what we're using, 2 meters. It's line of sight, and it doesn't jump over. It doesn't reflect off the ionosphere. It just keeps going out into space if you aim it up. So it's line of sight, but it will reflect off metal surfaces. So someone said it was within... was something they heard once, that somebody trying to gets around a mountain obstacle, found that cutting a road, the road crew had left a big bulldozer with a big blade in the front. You know how they're parabolic. And he got to a point where he figured the angle correct to bounce his signal off the parabolic surface of that blade on front of the bulldozer, and it went in the direction that he wanted to get around an obstacle. Now, that's pretty smart, I think. But it shows that these things do reflect. But it takes something like a high metal content in the soil. Around here, I can pick up dirt out of my backyard and hold it in my hand and rub it a little bit, and I see sparkles. You know what that is?
What's in the dirt there? Some kind of pyrite, I guess.
No, actually, it's flakes of mica. There's a lot of mica in the soil. And it can be that red clay-looking soil, but pick up some dry, you know, not wet, but some dry soil, some red clay, and rub it in your fingers, and it'll sparkle in the sunlight. That's mica. And that mica is a mineral that is an electrical insulator. It's an insulator. So drive a ground rod into the mica soil. You better drive it deep enough to get it out of the mica. It's just in the top layer of the soil. You have to use, around here, you have to use at least 8 to 10 feet of ground rod to get below the mica. Below the insulating effect, because the whole purpose of a ground rod is to create a launch pad in the soil. If the soil is conductive, it's going to be a greater effect. So in the near field, you will have sort of a reflection of your signal off the soil, and it launches back up into the air. And HF, it is just a marvelous trick to do that, but your soil has to be electrically conductive. Salt water is the most conductive surface you can bounce a signal off of, salt water. And of course, if you're operating at the beach but not so much fresh water, but it's very reflective. Salt water is very reflective, and that's why you get an additional skip or two if you're going DX, if you're near salt water. I just love antennas. KK4JBQ.
Well, it makes sense once you start playing with it, and it all ties together with other things, so it's all kind of interesting from that standpoint. And you were talking about the thermal repeater. I can hear them once in a while on the J-pole, but never been able to break it because there's a couple of hills in the way. And that's one reason I built this Yagi. I belong to that club, and I was with that experiment that Chad was running to see if they could build a simplex net, which they've got the data, and he did a real good job putting the data together. Now we're trying to figure out just what to do with it.
But I'm a member of the Thermal Belt Club also. Glad to meet you. But I was the one outlier, the one person that could not talk to anybody and could not be heard by anybody. So I was the outlier. And you need those kind of things when you're doing a statistical analysis. You need an outlier. And even the people, other hams that were 4 miles away or 6 miles away, they just happened to be in places where my signal was not going to reach because of the dirt that was between us. I'm kind of in a pocket. I'm high, but there are higher mountains close by. And that's not going to be any good. But, hey, just lately, let's see. We were doing another, I don't know, I'm forgetting the specifics, but we were doing another test. Yes. The second test of Simplex. And I was able to hear Chan. We used Simplex frequency, and Chad was the only one who was able to hear me. But it could be because he has been aimed at me. I'm not sure. But can you imagine how surprised I was that he could hear me? Whereas in the original, nobody heard me. Yeah, so that was very interesting. I learned a great deal, even though I was not heard or could not, I couldn't hear anyone, no one could hear me. I still learned a great deal, and that's the whole idea, KK4JBQ.
Only two stations in Inman. One of them I could hear, and I think he could hear me. The other one, I could not hear at all. I don't know how close they actually are. But reasonably close, but I guess one of them is behind the mountain.
Patrick, I cannot remember his call sign, but that would be Patrick. He has a cliff, a mountain cliff, in his backyard. He just walks out the back door, and there's that cliff, I don't know, 60 feet or more high. And so if anybody on the other side of that cannot hear Patrick, and so practically the whole club is on the other side of that. So it is, I think, that two people can hear Patrick. So they are the relay stations. They are the ones initially contacted for any message that should be sent to Patrick. They relay it on to him. That was what the test was all about. Who could hear who, and who could serve as a relay so that the whole network can function. Quite an involved examination of the data. A very impressive examination of the data occurred. And we had a Zoom meeting that, maybe you were in attendance there, we had a Zoom meeting regarding the data. It was fascinating. KK4JBQ.
Patrick in Penrose, KO4HKX. Is that the one you're talking about? Because I can talk directly to him, and I think I'm one of the relay stations that would be relaying stuff to him because he can't talk to anybody else.
That's the Patrick I'm talking about. If there's another station in Inman that has a similar issue, I'm not that aware. But most everybody in that club's aware of Patrick's dilemma, bless his heart. And if you're one that can relay to him, you're in a sweet spot. And that would be very critical when the message has to get through, as they say. You make that possible. And I'm sure Patrick, I know he was just thrilled to learn that that he could be a part of a network of stations because he felt so, you know, so cheated by nature. But we proved it to be fallible, you know. All of his problems did have at least one solution, maybe two.
Penrose, which is about halfway between Brevard and Hendersonville, and it's almost up a valley. There is a little bit in our way a hill, and I'm alongside of a mountain called Henry Mountain at about 2,200 feet. The French Broad is about 2,000, and Brevard itself, because I'm southwest of Brevard, is at about 2,200. I'm not sure exactly his altitude, but he and I can talk to each other and direct on Simplex, so he's not that far away. He's maybe, at the most, 10 miles from here.
Aware of what 10 meters can do. That's right in the sweet spot for 10 meters. And if you're line of sight, no obstacles between you, then that's what makes it possible. And a lot of folks just, you know, they don't care to know that much about what's going on. They just push the button and talk, and they hope to be heard. If they're not heard, then they just go on about their business. But it's ever so much more interesting to understand what's happening and why something fails or why something succeeds. As I say, when I heard Chad on Simplex, and even so, when both he and Anna heard me respond during the second Simplex test that we did, they were just flabbergasted because I was inaudible to everybody in the first test. I hadn't moved my antenna. I hadn't done a thing. I hadn't changed the power level on this. I mean, I'm still talking with an HT. But something had changed. Well, it was two days after the largest CME in 100 years. So maybe there was some sporadic E, don't you think?
They got portables. That's not all. The leaves are starting to come on the trees now.
Well, you're right. Leaves are coming on the trees, but that attenuates the signal. The CME and the resulting sporadic E in the atmosphere, sporadic emissions, the coronal mass ejection excited the Earth's magnetic field, and it energized to a great level. It energized the magnetic field, and it carries 2 meters. I mean, you could get, you know, 6,000 miles on 2 meters. If you're pointing in the right direction, and you got to, you know, it's just possible. I can't explain exactly why, but that CME accounted for a lot of extraordinary 2 meter activity. And I was a part of it. JK4, JBQ.
Gets to be a whole lot more difficult than it is in the winter for me to do. Now that the leaves are coming on the trees in this hole that I'm in, it's not like this repeater here that looks right down at me.
True. 2 meters is, oh gosh, I have forgotten what the band edges are. Well, let's say it's 142 to 147, okay? That is million cycles per second, I believe. Anyway, it's a very high number. It's a very high frequency. It's not ultra-high frequency, but it's very high frequency. And those frequencies have more difficulty getting to the other side of a leaf or a whole forest of leaves. And those frequencies don't go through building materials all that well. You know, some people, depending on how or what building materials are used in their house, they can't use an HT indoor. Other people, they lean a J-pole up in the living room, just lean it up against the wall, and they can get everywhere with it because the signals go right out and the long waves go through building materials much easier than shorter waves. That's just the way that is. Oh, boy. Well, I tell you, fellas, I'm starting to feel a little exhausted. The day has been a good day, but I've been hard at it. Spring cleaning, you know, spring cleaning. Been hard at it all day. I'm going to be around just a little while longer, but then I'm showing my tire. KK4, JBQ.
Man, most of what we do over here is UHF. Not all, but most of it's UHF. And as we're going into the summer, I know we're supposed to do a UHF 440 Simplex contest sometime in the next couple of months. It ain't going to be anywhere near as good as the 2 meet was in January. Go ahead, R.O.N.
R.O.N., war story for you. I think the tactical frequency we were using was around 50 megs on some of the tactical gear. And one of the stations in Korea picked up a weird call sign. Didn't match anything we had. And he finally came out and said, "Where are you?" Well, the other station was in Vietnam.
Well, 50 megs, that's somewhere in the 6 meter area. And that's a band, I think a lot of people call 6 meters the magic band. When the atmosphere is just right, and it doesn't depend a great deal on the ionosphere, you get a ducting effect. You get movement of electrons in the upper atmosphere. Will take your signal, just capture it and take it a very long distance before it lets it go. lets it go again. That's how I imagine it. It may be different, but that's how I imagine it happening. It ducts or catches and flows your signal in another direction, giving extra energy to it, so it can travel unusual distances. 6 meters will do that. It'll do that in the spring, and it'll do it again in the late winter, I think. Early spring, late winter is the way I have heard it. But anyway, that kind of does that. And 10 meters, too, is affected somewhat by that atmospheric ducting. Well, I'm going to turn out the lights here. I think it's time to curl up my toes and check my eyes for pinholes. My eyelids for pinholes. KI4DOS says that. I think it's all right. I think it's WD8RON. And KI4LZI. This is KK4JBQ. I will be clear on your final.
Thanks for the information. You've clarified a few things for me. And definitely interesting on a few of the others. And Andy always has something good to say. So I think I'm going to secure my station also.
Ed, I just happen to hear y'all still in here talking while I'm on the other end of the house. And like I was just saying, I can get in this repeater with an HD, so I just brought an HD with me to the other end. But one time on 6 meters in the spring, I talked to somebody on 52525 up in the northeast one time. So in the spring and times in the summer on 6 meters is when it opens up somewhat.
Yep, that's great, Andy. I do enjoy this radio, and conversations like this is why I love having an amateur radio. It is why I just renewed my license for another 10 years. And that ducting takes place in the troposphere, which is below the ionosphere. It takes place in the troposphere, so it's actually called tropospheric ducting. And with that, I'm going to call it quits. KK4JBQ, I am clear.
We'll talk to you too late. I'm going to finish eating my meal here, and I heard y'all still on there talking. A lot of times in the summer, too, you'll hear 10 FM propagation coming in here, and that KQ28 is up there in New York State. I'll come in here on 29620 a lot, too. KI4LCI4.